This is Undaunted Life, a man's podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Thompson. Let's get into it. All right, guys, we're going to keep this botching Afghanistan series going with our next guest, Eric Blem. So you should know that name because he was on episode 186 of this podcast. He is the author of my favorite book of all time, Fearless. That's the story of Adam Brown, a Navy SEAL that was killed overseas. And here's the thing about his perspective on what's going on in Afghanistan. He spent a ton of time with people that served over there. And he spent a ton of time with Gold Star families and Gold Star widows that have lost their people, lost their favorite people, their spouses, their loved ones over in Afghanistan. So he's uniquely suited to talk about what a lot of people are feeling right now. There's a lot of Gold Star families in America that are hurting, that they feel like they've been completely ran roughshod over, that their feelings aren't being taken into account, and that all these old wounds are coming right back up. So I really appreciated Eric's answers to a lot of these questions because he didn't just kind of keep it just to Afghanistan. He did kind of traverse into some other different subject matters, and he really let loose in a lot of areas, which I really appreciated. And again, guys, we're not doing any frills on this series, so let's go ahead and get into it. All right, Eric Blem, thank you so much for coming back on the show. I know we don't have the normal fanfare that we have for a lot of our episodes, but, you know, obviously the current situation that we're in warrants that. And I say that we're sitting here stateside, you know, just basically watching all this unfold on the news and on Twitter. But from your perspective, obviously you've spent a lot of time with military members that were active duty, a lot of military members that, you know, are retired, with Gold Star families, with other people that have been in the support system. So you've had a lot of tendrils spread out into the areas that are directly affected by what has happened in Afghanistan. But obviously, you know, a lot of people that are hurting right now because of what's happened just in the last 48 hours. So I'm just going to back away from the mic and give you some space to just give me some of your initial thoughts, and we'll go from there.
Thank you. I'm just at a loss. I just cannot believe what we're seeing unfold. It's almost as bizarre as, I don't know, the morning of 9/11, you know, where you're just watching and you're like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. And definitely having, you know, written stories about, you know, people who have fallen during that, you know, this last past 20 years and their family members, is just, it's heartbreaking at the end of the day. And it's heartbreaking to think of all of the Afghans who supported us and in the beginning. And then, you know, we chose the route to stay in country. And so for 20 years, they've been, you know, interlinked with our system, and we've basically, I will say, Joe Biden's administration has abandoned them, and it just did not have to happen. So I think the first thing I'd love to say is just, first of all, this is not a military failure. It is an administrative failure, a breakdown intelligence. I mean, these are things that were prophesized, foretold, predictable, 100%. And the fact that they enacted this withdrawal as they have is just, it's entirely predictable. You know, either Biden and his administration ignored the warnings, or chose not to take heed what his advisors told him, or worse, is there such a breakdown in communication within the Biden administration that the information never got to him? And that, to me, shows the deep flaws in the Biden administration, and it's for the whole public to see. This exit plan should have never gotten the green light as it was attempted to be executed. I've been glued to the television, and it's not surprising either, as you learn. I mean, Robert Gates, who was Secretary of Defense for, you know, Bush and then also the Obama administration, he wrote, it's been quoted all over the place, probably being redundant for your listeners, but he wrote that Biden was wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security issue over the past four decades. And when they asked him when he was running for president, they asked him, is he going to be a good president? He could not answer that. He said, I don't know. And so, remember, on top of that, what makes it more frustrating is, remember, not only as he orders this most disastrous exit of a military force in modern history, the one clear victory that we can look back on was following through with the original goal to hunt down and kill Osama bin Laden. who was, you know, for some of the people that that name comes up and they don't even realize that is the mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks. And Joe Biden voted against green lighting that mission.
Exactly.
The one victory in all of this. So anyways, it's just, it's frustrating. It's not surprising, sadly, but I think today, I think a lot of us out there, you know, fathers, mothers, grandparents, we're watching our grandchildren, our children go to school today. I sent off my daughter, fifth grader, today to school. And as Holly mentioned on her podcast, who, you know, she's she is a badass, you know, fearlessly standing up for human rights and women's rights, especially in Afghanistan. She's there right now. And she mentioned in there how for 20 years, an entire generation, there's, you know, families have sent their daughters and sons off to school. And there's dreams, there's goals, there's aspirations for of women, you know, going to college and becoming whatever they might want to become in life. And this morning, all of a sudden, after one weekend of a horrible decision, they're not going to school. Could you imagine that? Imagine you have a 20-year-old who was born around 9/11 and is in college right now, or you know, even a 5-year-old wanting to go off. And it's like, okay, well, your brother can go to school this morning, but you can't. And by the way, if you're going to leave the house, you're going to have to be covered or accompanied by a male member of the house, either your father or a brother. If not, you're staying in the house. It's basically COVID lockdown forever. And I just think it's just horrible. And it's, yeah, I'm shocked.
Yeah, I'm shocked as well. But I mean, you brought up a lot of good things there, Eric. But I mean, I forget what the actual name for this phrase is, but essentially it's don't attribute to malice what you can attribute to ignorance. But this situation and how it was handled by the Biden administration was so beyond the point of ignorant. And the buck has to stop somewhere, because if you watch Joe Biden's comments yesterday at his press conference, it was egregious. It was absolutely egregious for a commander in chief to basically take no responsibility whatsoever. Because here's the thing is, you, if you want to pass blame around, you can talk about the Joint Chiefs, you can talk about the generals, you can talk about all these different people. But apparently all those people told him, don't do this. Like, whatever you do, don't do this. And Dan Crenshaw may have said it best. He's like, all Biden had to do was nothing. All he had to do was nothing. And this situation was going to take care of itself. But I do want to kind of key in on something that you said a second ago. I jotted down a note here. You mentioned just briefly the allies that we had there on the ground. So this is going to be the interpreters, any of the informants, any of the people that basically allowed us to help them. Currently, the Taliban reportedly is systematically going door to door looking for those people and publicly executing them. So what are your thoughts, Eric, about, because I know as an author, you take in a lot of research and you kind of coalesce everything into a narrative form, but you do understand history and how that is going to potentially have an impact on the future. What does this mean for foreign policy for the United States government over the next several decades, knowing that the Kurds shouldn't trust us, the Afghans shouldn't trust us, no one else in that area should trust us? I mean, are we a generation removed away from being able to hit the reset button here, or am I being a little bit too crazy?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because in the world, you know, they look at America as it's one, it's almost like its own entity. Here in America, we're looking at and blaming Joe Biden, you know. And the Biden administration, we can see that this is a temporary thing. And, you know, in 4 years, that could be very different. But you still have your track record in the world as America as a whole. And so, you know, there's going to be some crossover and all that. And, you know, those, it just depends around the world. Depends where you get your news. I mean, there's people, I'm sure, just like here in America, depends where you get your news. And I think, if anything, there's no doubt that it's not going to help us in any way. It's going to definitely harm our reputation. I mean, you look at it, I mean, the Afghan people did, they did fight for themselves. His whole thing was, oh, they didn't stand and fight for themselves. Wrong. I mean, I don't know if anybody watched out there, the MSNBC, when they were interviewing the CIA analyst, who right. just blew, who was he talking to? Brian Williams, who basically... Right. Who keyed in on the one single line that could make Biden look okay, saying, well, Biden owned it. He said the buck stops here. And the guy went, no. You know, you basically put it off on everybody else, including the Afghan army, who for the past, you know, since 2014, I think is the date. I could be wrong. Maybe it's the entire since, but I mean, 40 or 50,000 Afghans have died.
50,000 Afghans have died since 2014. Yes.
2014. Okay. So you have that. And then you look at our situation, in the last 18 months, we've lost, I think, zero, in Afghanistan. And, you know, I interviewed and even I followed up knowing I was going to be on this podcast with Jason Amerine, who was the captain of ODA 574, who, you know, one of the first Special Forces teams in. And he said this was just stupid the way this was taken on. And he's usually a pretty measured, you know, individual as far as that goes in any policy. It was just, you know, just gloriously stupid how it went about this, because in reality, 2,500 people to keep that footprint there, which was all it took to not win, not to defeat the Taliban, but to keep them in, as it's been told, a stalemate, you know, a tie basically that allowed the country to move forward and have this freedom that they've had for the past 20 years. So I think a lot of people agree, yeah, we can't be there fighting a war for 20 years, but hey, we've had a giant base in Germany. We've had giant bases in Japan. We have 28,000 people in South Korea. Those are presences that we've kept. We didn't keep a presence in Vietnam because we got run out. We didn't get run out of Afghanistan. We left willingly. And that's where the travesty is, because the way it was executed was just wrong. And it is, going back to your mention of all the people that supported us, we abandoned so many people who helped us along the way, and not necessarily helped us. We helped them help themselves. We gave them the courage without very much of a footprint. I mean, the losses that we're going to incur because of this are going to far exceed what might have happened maybe for decades for us with to keep a small force there. And it's frustrating. I mean, I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated for the families who lost people there, who had personal relationships with the Afghans, who they would say, they would go on a line and they say, you know, we promise we will not abandon you. And, you know, we wanted to get them set up, but at the end of the day, that's what Joe Biden has done. And he cannot put it off on anybody. He can't put it off on Trump. He can't put it off on Obama. He can't put it off on Bush. Yeah, he inherited this, but he is executing this.
But one thing that you talked about is, I'm not sure if you talked about this off air when you and I were talking before, or if you were talking about it beforehand, but just how angry you are at all this. And in just 30 minutes before I hopped on the call with you, I was talking to a friend of mine that said, you know, he's waking up in the middle of the night, just angry. And we're both civilians, and we're both finding it hard to like concentrate today and hard to like figure out where our emotions are on this. And I heard somebody, he was actually on the Dan Crenshaw podcast earlier this week. He's like, he's going back and forth between the feeling of wanting to grab his kit and grab his buddies and go hop on a flight and go over there and try to do something about it, or curling up under his bed with a bottle of bourbon. And there's kind of these warring feelings. But for you as a civilian that has spent so much time with military members and their families, you know, explain kind of that emotion right now of kind of being back and forth between anger and sadness.
I think it hits close to home because of that, because you get, you know, emotionally involved with, you know, the losses of our men and women who have fought and given so much in order to help give the Afghan people more of what many of us take for granted here, you know, the freedoms, the basic freedoms, like literally our kids going to school. And that is, and it makes you angry when you know that it could have been done in a way that allowed that to continue. And I think for that small, I mean, we could go back and discuss the debate of whether we should have stayed there all these years. That's kind of a moot point, because the point is we did stay there all these years. We did move forward with the policy, whether you call it nation building or whatever you want to call it, that kept us there all these years. But at the end of the day, I believe that was it's because as Americans, I mean, we are decent people despite our flaws and our you know, the fact of what's going on, the infighting that the pandemic has started, and I will say that the media fuels between all of us. At the end of the day, we want other people to enjoy the same freedoms that we enjoy. And that is, you know, important. And so when you see that taken away, something that we basically have helped instill over there all these years, and that what we've fought for and what we've lost, it's not like, hey, we're going to fight forever. I think, yeah, is it right to get out to stop fighting
the so-called war. But the reality is, and from what I understand, you know, it was a pretty small commitment comparatively for the gain that it gave us, allowed us that foothold there. What's going to happen now? Al-Qaeda, other terrorist network groups, ISIS, who knows what, will move in. The Chinese will come in and mine their minerals and their precious metals and everything that they can, their oil, for their own good. And there's all these things that are, is just the ripple effect of, hey, what would have it really taken to maintain a presence there that allowed and gave the Afghan army the ability to keep this stalemate going, where it might be forever, but I just feel, and people have told me that it really does seem like, especially now, the we're going to lose a lot more for by going back in there now, when we could have either done nothing and or just slowly gotten people out, which was what was, it wasn't like there was no plan. There was a plan. There are lots of people are coming out now, you know, that are saying, no, we've, I spent years putting together, you know, exit plans and how to get people out. And they decided to do it. And I sometimes wonder if it's because it was so close to the September 11, 20 year, anniversary, where Biden, you know, delusionally thought, oh, we're going to be able to say on September 11 that we are gone and it has been a success and mission accomplished. If he thought that, he got bad information or made a bad decision, because that same anniversary is what probably gave, I mean, that is a victory, date in the eyes of jihadists and terrorist groups and, you know, some of the more fanatical Afghans. That is like a battle cry. So the timing of this couldn't have been worse either. So I don't know. I'm kind of all over the map.
No, but this is all great, because the last point that you brought up there is, who was trying to get our troops out by the 20th anniversary of 9/11 appealing to stateside? Who exactly was that appealing to? Which I think this played into, this is the latest iteration of the horrible marketing problem. I don't mean that to be dismissive of what was going on over there, but you know, I don't think Bush, Obama, or Trump did a great job of communicating exactly what we were doing when we were doing it. And the same goes to the generals and the rest of the Joint Chiefs. But with Trump, and then on into Biden, all they had to say is, guys, this is not war in the way that you're thinking about war. This is not World War I, where we're all going to line up on either side and charge each other, or that we're just going to carpet bomb the area. That's not what we're dealing with. Because why did it take this situation in Afghanistan for the general public in the United States to know that we haven't lost a soldier in Afghanistan for a year and a half? And that doesn't make that person's sacrifice and the person's life that was lost a year and a half ago any less important. It's like, why did we continuously hear people, like even a guy that's in my foxhole, one of my personal buddies called me. He's like, well, you know, at least these endless wars are stopping. And he didn't realize that we still had troops in Germany and in Korea and in Japan, and that we hadn't taken any of these casualties. So is it a marketing problem that kind of got us in this position? Is it just overzealous politicians? Like, you know, everything's going bad for Biden right now. Seemingly the country seems to be in disarray. Was this some feather in his cap? Like, can you figure out maybe where the problem maybe started?
I can only speculate, but I will say, and I think everybody agrees, that the Democratic side of the Democratic Party is much more effective at their getting the word out and firing up people in for, you know, with whether it's their message or propaganda or whatever, over the conservatives. And so if you consider that, someone might have been looking at this as, hey, we can do this, is going to be an amazing thing that we can do. And they just, not knowing the situation at all, just the idea that, yeah, like the magazine covers blurb, we're out 20 years later and we're out, or mission accomplished. I mean, whatever they might have been thinking, it's obviously totally misinformed and ignorant if you really look at what the situation is there. And history, we just look at history. We already knew that, you know, it's the graveyard of empires. We know this. We weren't trying to turn it into into our empire, and we weren't trying to do anything more than, I think, maintain a semblance of freedom for the average Afghan person. And at the end of the day, they totally blew it. They completely blew it. They had such an opportunity. They could have gotten out all these people I mean, I think that they've said there's a growing list. The CIA analyst said he knew of 14,000 people. And then And then Biden says, well, we've accepted 2,000. It's like, that's nothing. I mean, that could have supported, you know, maybe the Kandahar region for if that. And it's just, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I think that what's different about this situation right now is that the mainstream media can't ignore it. It's really hard for them to spin it in a way that will, it's like that he's going to have to come to the reckoning of what he did. And that was, you know, my concern with this administration as a journalist, because freedom of speech and the media as a watchdog is the most important aspect, I think, of what keeps a government in check. And in freedom of speech, you know, censorship, whatever. And in the, you could just watch it, didn't matter what side you were on, but in the election process, in the, you know, running up to the election, the media was very much, in the mass media was very much spinning everything positive and hiding things that were negative about Biden. And that didn't happen on the other side. You still heard about everything. And I guess that's what, you know, was interesting with COVID. You know, as a journalist, it gave me an opportunity to watch all the media, to watch CNN, to watch MSNBC, to watch Fox, and then the various online outlets. And you could look at them every day. And I did. I watched them every day. I watched the entire Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention. And it could not have been more different in how it was reported and their messaging and of what was reality for someone like myself who did take the time to watch both sides and someone who strives for balance as a journalist. And that's been lost. But in this case, it's so big that it can't be hidden. It can't be spun. And I think that it shows some people that there are deep flaws within the Biden administration, either for their decision making, the communication. I mean, look at the chaos that they would say before that there's chaos in the Trump administration. Well, the Biden administration just created chaos. They've created chaos on the southern border. That's, you know, it's coming up to this. The wide open borders. I have friends and contacts in the border patrol industry. They're letting anybody they want that comes to the border across without COVID testing, without any real screening. And then once they're here, then they're looking into it. And I mean, that is just, it's wrong. Countries, all countries, even countries like America that say, hey, come bring all and, you know, make your American dream, find your American dream. Yeah. But you know what? They all do it legally. There is a process. And to show how right now all these people who actually helped America basically proved it, you know, and what they often do for an immigrant is they say, hey, if you serve in the military, you can get your citizenship. Well, there's a boatload of Afghans that have served them America and want to come to America, and they've paid their dues and they've taken their risks and they've put their families and themselves in jeopardy for all these years, and they can't even get on a plane to get here. Yet, if they somehow could have gotten to Mexico and then the Baja Peninsula or into Texas, they could have walked across the border illegally. It just does not make sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of things there that we unfortunately don't have the time to get into, but you did mention something with the mainstream media, Eric. That's something that I'm paying very, very close attention to, because in the first really 48 hours or so since Sunday, since we've kind of been sitting in this milieu of craziness,
yeah,
I am seeing even left-wing sources being not terribly apologetic, or I mean, they're challenging the Biden administration. Right. And they're challenging Joe Biden. They're asking, where is Joe? So Joe came and popped down from vacation for 20 minutes, read off a teleprompter, a statement that someone else wrote, and then hopped back on a helicopter, go to Camp David. I'm going to be watching very close attention to that, but I know you got to go here in just a second. So I do want to wrap up with this question here. Again, you've spent a lot of time with Gold Star families, right? You spent a lot of time in a Gold Star family, which led to the greatest book, my favorite book that I've ever read, Fearless. And you spent time with these families, and you spent time, you know, shedding tears with them and on your own, reflecting on them. So if you're a Gold Star family right now and you lost your spouse or your dad or your brother or someone overseas to Afghanistan, and now you're seeing what you're seeing now in the country, what is your message to those people? Because I'm a very pessimistic guy. I'm not super like, rah, rah, it's okay, let's make it better. Especially right now, I'm finding it very, very hard to find the positive. So what would you say to those families?
Well, off the cuff like this with a quick fired off question, I just have to look at it and say, hey, at a personal level, the American soldier, humanitarian worker, nurses and doctors who have gone there to help deliver babies, everything, they have connected with the Afghan people at a personal level. Adam Brown sharing, you know, he could have brought anything, done anything, but he asked his parents to send, they asked him what he wanted for Christmas one year. He said, send me shoes, little kids' shoes and socks, because a lot of these kids don't have shoes and it's cold. And he took the time while out on patrol to find kids that were wearing sandals or whatever in cold weather and put them on. So for people like Adam, Jefferson Donald Davis and Dan Pettitore, the first special forces who were killed in Afghanistan, in southern Afghanistan, right after 9/11, you know, they connected with the kids and the youth, and they saw what real America is all about, and that love is conveyed. And I think that, you know, to give your life for another is the greatest deed, right? You say that for your brother, your sisters in arms, but also at the end of the day, it's what more of a humble, kind, and compassionate and brave thing to do than to look past yourself and go fight for someone else's freedom. Maybe someone who is, you know, not from your country. That's the ultimate. And so I would say for everybody out there who is looking in disillusion at this, their sons and daughters did make a difference and have made a difference in the world. And the freedoms that they've helped to instill in the Afghans now might help give them, if there is a resistance at some point, it gave a whole generation of people a taste of freedom that they might not have had before. And I feel like that is something that can't be lost, that will need help. And again, we could have continued that into another generation or two, which could have helped even more. But sadly, it was cut short, that process. But at the end of the day, that's the family. I haven't even contacted the families because I know they've got to be hurting. And I know they're getting reached out by so many people. I'm giving them a few days before I reach out to just say, I'm so sorry what's been going on. But I know that most of them, all of them, are proud of what they did. You know, they're scratching their heads like the rest of us about how this all went about and how this has all gone down.
It's a very unfortunate situation, but I'm glad you spent a little bit of time with us, giving a little bit of perspective on this. So even now, like, I'm getting tongue-tied because I'm frustrated just like you are. I'm mad just like you are. And I can't imagine what those families are going through. And I feel like I haven't even given enough consideration to that. And so we'll certainly be doing that as much as possible. But Eric, thanks so much for coming back on.
Yeah. At a personal level, they made a difference.